You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I am Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
I'm Aaron McMahon.
Michigan football returned last weekend, and the Wolverines were impressive, dominating Minnesota in a primetime matchup on the road. Michigan State visits the Big House this Saturday. We'll talk about what Michigan needs to do to avoid the upset. That and more on this episode of Wolverine Confidential. Guys, good to see you. We finally have a foosball game to talk about.
Yeah, finally.
An impressive one at that. Yeah, what a performance by the Wolverines. My goodness. I know we definitely weren't expecting that with our predictions. So 0-1 for all three of us to start off the season.
Well, you know, we got an email to that effect. I don't know if he's also a podcast listener. You know, we're very young and new to this game of college football. So, you know, just trying to, find our way, get our bearings here in this unique season. But I guess, you know, Aaron, I do kind of want to ask you about just kind of the atmosphere there with no fans and kind of what it was like. But, you know, we can also save that to next week till we get, you know, kind of, I can get two people's perspective on that. But yeah, I guess I'd like to hear about it, especially on the road at night and all that.
Yeah, it was weird. I took a train from downtown Minneapolis, the hotel, to the stadium, and I probably passed maybe 50 people the whole way. And usually when you're walking to a stadium, even, you know, hours before the game, like we do, you know, you see tailgating and parking lots full and everything was desolate. It was empty. It was bizarre. It was something I've never been a part of before. Even when we were in college at CMU and MAC games, I mean, MAC games aren't really known to draw many people, but at least they had a few more than this game did.
I think
the official attendance ended up being, I think, 589, and that was all parents and families of players. But it was weird. You know, you can hear a lot. There was no crowd noise to deal with. Press box was even spread out. You know, you had several feet between you and the reporter next to you. So it was something where, you know, something I'll probably never forget. And it was an interesting, you know, experience.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of things that we had talked about, you know, for weeks, for months, really, you know, leading into the season about, you know, just kind of questions we had. And, you know, you don't necessarily get definitive answers, you know, in the first game, but, you know, you get a glimpse. And I think, you know, that first one would be Joe Milton. You know, what would he look like as Michigan's quarterback? You know, you figure you needed him to be, you know, like really good with some of the other, you know, questions that you had. And it was just interesting because, you know, the first quarter, you know, Michigan scores 21 points and Milton never really had to do too much. And that kind of continued throughout the game. He was very good, but, you know, there weren't any particularly long passes, you know, that were completed. There were some, you know, a lot of runs after the catch, but, you know, his couple of his true deep shots, you know, didn't land, you know, and as a runner, he was effective. You know, you take away the sack and it was good rushing numbers, you know, 7 rushes for 60 yards, if I'm remembering correctly. But yeah, he was just like very, very good and very efficient. And I don't want to say the word boring, but it was like a, you know, spectacular, unspectacular performance in a way.
And he didn't turn the ball over. Number one key thing right there.
Yeah, great point.
It was, I think, the best case scenario for debuting a brand new quarterback and offensive line for this Michigan offense. I mean, you get a 70-yard touchdown run on the first play from scrimmage for Michigan. You get a defensive score, and then you get a long kickoff return late in the first quarter. So Joe didn't, like you said, Joe didn't have to do a ton early on, and I think that's what contributed to him becoming so comfortable back there. They opened the game with him throwing a 24-yard bubble screen to Blake Corum on the outside. I just kind of get his arm good and him comfortable in the pocket. And I think the start was fantastic. You know, you could have, like I said, you couldn't have asked for anything better. It got them going. It got them moving. That first drive was hampered by the Ben Mason penalty and the block punt, but that's another issue we can get into later. But yeah, Milton looked good. He wasn't asked to do much, but what he was asked to do, I thought he executed relatively well. Yeah, it wasn't a Graham Mertz style performance where he went out there and you know, light the world on fire, but it was satisfactory. And I wrote that, and I believe that he did what was asked of him. And he did it well. He didn't do anything spectacular, but you didn't have to. And I think that's all you needed. Given the question marks with the quarterback and the offensive line situation.
Yeah, I think Michigan's offense on 9 of their 12 drives either scored a touchdown or had a field goal attempt. So, I mean, if you can't really ask for much more efficiency out of your offense against a ranked team on the road than that.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I said in the intro, you know, we're talking, going to be talking about Michigan State. I think, though, it's helpful if you're going to look forward to kind of, you know, look to the past too and see, you know, what happened in their previous game, especially because, you know, as it relates to Milton and the offense, you know, kind of this, that similar, just steady performance is going to be enough, you know, to win a lot of games. And I think that's certainly true this Saturday against the Michigan State team that, you know, lost to Rutgers at home and, you know, is a 25-point underdog in this game. You know, sticking with the offense, we talked about how it was going to be multiple, you know, backs this year and that one guy getting 25 carries. And boy, was that true, like to the extreme in the opener. You know, Blake Corum got the first touch of the game, which I suppose was surprising in a way if you were going to pick one guy. But in the end, four running backs had between 4 and 6 carries. I mean, that talk about balance.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, we kind of expected it to some degree. I mean, we'd heard all four, you know, other names come up during the offseason. Josh Gass liked what they had. Jabe Harbaugh felt like there was a role carved out for each one of them. And Michigan tried to use them in various situations. I mentioned Blake Corum on the bubble screens. Hassan Hoskins, he broke that big run. They used him in more power situations. Zach Charbonnet had that big run. So it was a good way, I think, to introduce all four of them in the game. And I do think there's some mystery at the running back position about what exactly they have. You know, we know Chris Evans, but he hadn't played in over a year. Blake Corum was playing his first ever game at the college level. You know, Zach Charbonnet was healthy finally. So I do think there's some mystery there in that Josh Gass is trying to, you know, find out exactly what he has in an actual game. So I'm curious to see how the carries are distributed here in the next couple of weeks. I presume the Michigan State game is going to be something similar. But at some point, I have to think they're going to get a couple of these guys who are going to have to bust out and get most of the carries. But yeah, it was a very pretty good game for the running backs. A couple of big runs, as I mentioned. You know, we had Charbonnet, you had Hoskins, you had multiple guys involved. Two for 256 yards, 5 touchdowns. They averaged 8.3 yards per carry. I think part of that is the talent and you know, improved experience from this group. But I do think the offensive line deserves some of that credit too.
Real quick on the running back. So the surprising thing to me, I think the least impressive running back of the group was Chris Evans. I know he had that one touchdown run, but other than that, every time he touched the ball, you didn't really get wowed at all. Whereas, I mean, Haskins had that long run. Charbonnet had that long run. Blake Corum looked explosive in a couple of his touches. It's like, I did not expect Blake Corum's role to be that expansive in the first game. He only had a couple. He had 7 touches, which for a freshman running back making his college debut on the road is, I mean, the coaches weren't lying when they said he's going to play this year. So I know it's just one game, but that was my takeaways from the running back position in the opener.
And yeah, and we kind of talked about the offensive line as it relates to that. Thought it was a very strong performance. I mean, they looked like they played well together. You know, Harbaugh said, you know, they graded out pretty well, you know, individually. Yeah, I mean, it was there were questions, of course, when you replace 4 starters, but yeah, I thought they handled themselves well.
I thought the game plan was fantastic from Ed Warner. He's obviously offensive line coach, but he's also the run game coordinator. So a lot of these run fits and these schemes that they used on Saturday were dialed up by him. And I do think the offensive line, they got a lot of help. They had Joel Hollingford in there in several instances as a 6th offensive lineman. They used Ben Mason to their advantage in run blocking. And I think that push and that extra help helped, especially in those long runs. You know, the Charbonnet run, the 70-yard run, that was one of the reasons for that was because Ben Mason picked up a block. They did their job. They exceeded expectations, I think, like Joe Milton did. I'm curious to see going forward if this is going to be, you know, the offensive line we see. I mean, it's obviously it's only one game, But going on the road and playing against, you know, at the time a ranked Minnesota team, I don't think you could have asked much more from the offensive line. They looked cohesive as a unit. I think, and that's not something we've seen from Michigan's offensive lines in the last couple of years. Even last year, when you know the talk was about the offensive line and how experienced they were and how talented they were, it took them a few weeks to get going. John Runyon didn't play early on, so they had some younger guys there. But this group looked cohesive and dialed in. And I'm curious to see, you know, here in the next couple of weeks if they can keep that up.
Final sort of offensive position group, you know, the wide receivers. Again, we talked about, you know, how would they be without a true kind of number one guy? 9 different players catch a pass. And I know, you know, those weren't all wide receivers, but still, they all got involved and, you know, looked good in some cases running after the catch. There were a couple that I thought, you know, guys, maybe, you know, Roman Wilson in particular, there's one catch that I saw, you know, from Milton that it looked like he hit him in stride. He could have kept going. He kind of went down with it just maybe to be sure that he held on. But yeah, it was impressive in that way too. I mean, they certainly moved the ball through the air. Now, as far as, you know, just other questions or surprises we had, some we talked about a lot was who was going to start at that second cornerback spot opposite Vincent Gray. And it was Draymond Green that ended up getting the start. I guess, how do you guys think he did?
I thought he played really well. I'm surprised he's not getting more discussion from the coaches and Harbaugh. He had 3 pass breakups. He was involved in several disruptions. I thought he played really well, getting his first start and everything else. I thought him and Vincent Gray both held up pretty well. You know, Rashad Bateman got his throws, and he had one big explosive play. But by and large, they did their job, I thought. I have to say the more question mark is at the safety spot. You know, I don't know the status of Dax Hill. It sounds like he's going to play on Saturday. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't, Michigan has some concern there. I didn't think Kari Page played very well when he came in. Michigan had to go to Hunter Reynolds at some point to fill in. So, Michigan better hope Dax Hill's happy or is healthy and sounds like he is. But again, we don't, you know, I don't know. So I thought those Jamon Green handled himself very well. I'm curious if he can string together a couple good games. But for a first-time start for a guy who really wasn't in the mix, you know, a couple months ago when Avery Towns was around, I thought he played well.
Yeah, I mean, for him and Vincent Gray to be left on an island as much as they were, and for them to be as solid in coverage as they were was really impressive. I mean, they both gave up 1 deep completion, 1 to Chris Autumbell, and 1 to Rashad Bateman. But other than that, I mean, they were blanketing those receivers all night and kind of limited any of those deep big play threats down the field. So yeah, very, in my opinion too. Harbaugh said they graded out really well, and after watching the game again, yeah, they definitely impressed.
I was going to say, we didn't know if Green, I wouldn't say Green's start was a surprise. We knew it. We knew someone had to be out there and that he was in the mix, but still, okay. That gave us confirmation it was him. Were there any other like surprises as far as, you know, personnel? I the only one I can think of is that, you know, Eric All started at tight end, but again, it's not like he jumped Nick Eubanks in the depth chart. It was that Nick Eubanks was hurt or I guess unavailable. I don't know if we know if it's an injury or COVID or what's going on, but that's probably just going to be how this season is, where you don't really know. But he didn't make the trip. Is that correct? Was there anyone else that I'm missing?
We were told he didn't make the trip, but then we found out that he did, apparently. So that's a little confusing point at this point. I don't know what's up with Nick Eubanks. Jim Harbaugh really wouldn't talk about it this week, but we do know I can say for a fact he was not in uniform Saturday on the field.
Gotcha. So yeah, any other surprises as far as playing time or?
Well, the only thing I was surprised by was early on Michigan's 2 running back, 1 fullback set. They started with 2 receivers. I think most of us thought they'd go 3 wide, in some cases maybe 4 at some point. But it seems like Michigan is kind of molding. And again, this is only one game, so it'll be interesting to see what they're doing against Michigan State and Indiana. But they almost went back to the Harbaugh's more old school power run fits, while melding some of the new Josh Gattis, you know, speed and space type throwing options. I was surprised by that a little bit. They utilized Ben Mason quite a bit, especially in run blocking. Like I said, they threw a 6th offensive lineman in there quite a bit. As we talked about earlier, they're utilizing a lot of 2 running back sets, especially using the one outside. So I'm curious to see if they do that going forward. It makes sense to me because Michigan really doesn't have a number one receiver at this point. I guess you could say Johnny Bell, but I necessarily wouldn't say that. I'd be more inclined to, you know, if Nico Collins is around saying that he's the guy. I was surprised at how they did that. It'll be interesting, like I said, to see if they do that going forward. But it almost seems like they're kind of doing more throwback offensive sets under what Jim Harbaugh liked to do, while melding what Josh Gad has brought.
Okay, so we've kind of mostly talked about, you know, kind of the good from you know, a 49-24 victory against a ranked team on the road. You know, kind of looking to dial it back, kind of if you're a Michigan fan, to temper your expectations for, you know, Michigan State even and Indiana and beyond. You know, there are some concerns. I mean, the first thing was kind of just out of their control, but I think it's worth pointing out Minnesota was missing some guys out there. Okay, you know, a couple offensive linemen that were expected to start were not out there. You know, they did not have their punter or, you know, or their kickoff guy, which mattered. I mean, like, I'm not saying Michigan couldn't have, you know, still just had longer drives potentially, but it sure helps when they're kind of squibbing it and not even squibbing it very well. And, you know, you're just getting great field position or the punts. Again, you've done your work to stop them, but, you know, Minnesota absolutely cannot, you know, is just not punting the ball very far. And again, great field position. So I think those things, you know, have to be pointed out.
Yeah, it backfired on twice. I mean, yeah. you saw the block punt, and then you saw the long kickoff return by Hassan Haskins, 65 yards or whatever, on the squib. So, like, Michigan capitalized a couple times. Or, I'm sorry, not the block punt, the fake punt.
Yeah,
Michigan
right.
was able to get them on. And that, again, contributed to good field position for the Wolverines. And it seemed like all game they had really favorable field position, especially early. And, yep. and that, again, contributed to Joe Milt not having to orchestrate or at least lead or engineer those long drives that they were able to do later in the game. But to start, it was a lot easier for that Michigan offense than you'd probably expect.
Yeah, I think the drive right after the fake punt, they actually did punt the ball that time, and it was just an atrocious punt. It's like, all right, that makes sense now why they would go for the fake punt in their own territory, because that was not a pretty sight to see the punt on the next possession.
Now, while we're on special teams, I don't think Michigan played very well on special teams either.
No, maybe there you go.
We're going with this conversation, but, you know, they have some work to do. Speaking of work to do, I think one of the things that came out of Saturday was special teams. You know, Jake Moody was 0-for-3 in field goals. Now, Michigan apparently did not have Quinn Nordine available. He was on the field pregame in uniform, warming up like he usually does. But Jim Harbaugh revealed after the game that he wasn't available. He was apparently dealing with an injury. They expect to have him this week. But, you know, Moody, he handled all the place-kicking duties, 0-for-3 in field goals. And when you're an offense trying to put points up on the board in a quick fashion, that's not going to cut it. So I presume if, you know, if Quinn Nordine is available this week, he will be the guy. But Michigan also had other, you know, special team blunders. They had the block punt that they need to clean up. And so there's things to work on there. I mean, that was probably the biggest glaring concern for me from this Michigan team this week. I know there are question marks about the defensive line and defending the run. They gave up 150 yards to Muhammad Ibrahim. But I'm going to give them a break this week because a couple things. One, Michigan was deploying a lot of three-man fronts late in the game, and Aiden Hutchinson even addressed that this week in interviews. He thought they were going to throw the ball more late in the game because they were down so many points. So that's why they were doing three-man fronts, and Minnesota just kept running the football. So there were holes there, obviously, with fewer guys. So we'll see. You know, this defensive line, I think, is just too talented, too experienced to give up that many rushing yards again to a running back. But it is a question mark, so we'll monitor that here in the next few weeks.
Yeah, the kicking, I mean, it made sense that Nordine, like, wasn't available, or at least wasn't 100% after the fact, because watching the game, you know, I'm thinking at least, okay, we've seen Michigan have a quick hook for their kickers, you know, like, you miss one, you know, we're going to the other guy here. And that didn't happen after the first miss or the second one. You're like, all right, well, what, I guess it did not cross my mind. Oh, well, he wasn't available, but yeah, that would make sense. So yeah, that's something to shore up this week for sure. So yeah, I mean, you know, as it relates to Michigan State, obviously it's a program, you know, we cover here at MLive as well, you know, MLive.com/Spartans for that coverage. And there is a Spartan Confidential podcast as well. I'll give a plug to that if you guys want to listen to. I think their Michigan preview episode is already out. So yeah, I mean, Michigan is a huge favorite in this game. We've seen it before. 2016, I want to say, maybe it was a game in East Lansing. You know, Jabril Peppers had a big game, I think. You know, it was closer than that when all was said and done. I think kind of Michigan dominated the yards and stuff like that. But that's kind of how it's been in some of these years. Michigan, you know, wins the yardage battle and things like that, but Michigan State manages to hang around and you know, be in the game potentially even into the fourth quarter. But yeah, you figure just you lose to Rutgers like that, that's probably not the case. But we'll see what Any thoughts about, you know, Michigan heading into Michigan State?
I mean, for me, just looking at the box score a little bit, I mean, Michigan State was able to move the ball. I mean, they had 369 total yards, and most of it was through the air. I mean, if you take away Rocky Lombardi's two interceptions, I mean, 31 of 43 for 319 yards and three touchdowns, well, that should be enough to win you a game against a Rutgers team that hadn't won a Big Ten game since, what, 2017. But, yeah, I mean, anytime you turn to the field, I think they only punted two times. So it's like you just say – talk about those two things, you're like, I'm sure Michigan State had a good chance of winning. But yeah, with seven turnovers, it's going to be tough to win a game. And I don't think they'll have anywhere close to that against Michigan. So I don't think it's going to be a close game, but I think Michigan State has a good shot at covering 25-point spread. Yeah, so we'll see.
I think turnovers were just a symptom of Michigan State's lack of everything this offseason. They got a new coach late, brand new coaching staff, no practice in the spring. They were quarantined for a while. They had, what, a month to prep and just kind of come together and figure out what they had. I just think you saw a, you know, unorganized, ill-prepared Michigan State football team. And I don't know if that was necessarily unexpected. I mean, I think they're going to struggle this year. I don't really foresee this game on Saturday being close. I think that spread's right about right. I think it can go either way. I think when we went back and watched both week one, I think you saw a prepared Michigan team that you can tell has a lot of players coming back. They're all Michigan, you know, they brought back all their offensive coaching staff members. They're ready to go. And Michigan State they just weren't. I mean, you're right. They moved the football pretty well. Rocky Lombardi, I think, will be the key to Michigan State on Saturday. If he can be similar to how he was on Saturday against Rutgers, I think State will probably stand a chance. They can probably try and keep it relatively close. But just based on what I saw Saturday from Michigan, I think this Wolverines team is a step ahead of where everyone thought they would be. And Michigan State is probably where most of us thought, maybe even behind. They're two different programs in two different spots right now. And I think that's going to be shown Saturday in on the field.
Yeah, I'll tell you this much. Rutgers is, you know, in that Big Ten standings board that you guys used to see behind me, which has now moved up to its, you know, prime spot in the living room. Rutgers is higher than it's ever been. They're fourth there in the Big Ten with all Big Ten games here. They're 1-0. But yeah, I guess, you know, speaking of that Big Ten standing board, I've added a new feature. It's the COVID X. I have to put an X through games. I had already filled out the matchups for the week. And Wisconsin at Nebraska, they get X's over them. And I just think it's relevant to talk about because is absolutely something that could happen to Michigan at some point this season, if not, you know, directly within their team, to the opponent that they were going to face that week, you know, having an outbreak. And it's just the nature of, you know, college football right now. And especially in a league that had, you know, no wiggle room with byes or whatever. So, you know, and can you imagine that? I mean, like you're Michigan. I mean, it's kind of similar spot to Wisconsin. Big win, you know, blowout win. You're riding high, and you're ready for your next game. And then it's just not happening. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely something that could, you know, befall Michigan at some point this season.
It's truly the great unknown here in the Big Ten. You know, all it takes is one outbreak, and you miss. You know, you have a game canceled, maybe potentially more, and then it potentially wipes out. You know, what you've built or your chances of getting the Big Ten title game or whatever. It's unfortunate for Wisconsin. I think you're probably going to see it happen again at some point in this Big Ten season. I thought it was, you know, almost unrealistic to expect every single Big Ten team to get through a 9-game and 9-week schedule. It's just, especially with given what's everything that's going on. You know, we've seen games canceled around college football. Cases are rising around the U.S., especially here in the Midwest. I mean, it's not surprising to me. It's unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, it's something we're going to have to monitor every week, you know, and not only from Michigan's side, but its opponent. I mean, right. If an opponent wipes out, Michigan won't play that Saturday. And we saw today or yesterday what Nebraska tried reaching out and scheduling a non-conference game against UT Chattanooga. Big Ten apparently nixed that, it's been reported. So they're just down at least one game. You know, Nebraska will not play a game, even though they're ready and prepared and by all accounts tested, you know, they're relatively successful with the testing this week. Mm-hmm. They're not going to play football, and it's not their fault. It's the opponent's fault. But that's the nature, I think, of this college football season here in 2020.
Yeah. And if we want to talk about, you know, as it relates to Michigan with Wisconsin, they're scheduled to play November 14th. So two Saturdays from this one, it's just too early to know. really anything about what players would be available. There's the 21-day rule in the Big Ten, which is just going to come under further scrutiny now that it's real. I mean, you knew that was the time frame, but now to actually have, you know, players sitting out. But, you know, as it relates to, say, the quarterback, Graham Mertz, you don't know if the test truly was on Saturday and 21 days would take you through the Friday before the game, he'd be allowed to play the next day. Now, would he be, after having done nothing for 21 days, would he be ready to take the field? I don't know. I also just think it was one game. Let's not say he's Joe Montana and that it's a major deal either way, whether he plays or not. But it's just too early to have any idea whether when Wisconsin exactly will be back. You know, they could play next week, but you just don't know.
It is funny to think, like, if Wisconsin was able to play this week, they would likely be down to their fourth string quarterback, and Michigan won't even say who their third string quarterback is at this point. So if any sort of outbreak happened with Michigan at the quarterback position, it would not be a good situation for the Wolverines. So yeah, for them especially, they have to really mitigate the spread, because at a lot of positions, I don't think they have as much depth as maybe some other teams in the conference.
Yeah. I mean, the team, we've said it, the team that, you know, standing at the end is going to be one that, yes, was talented to begin with, but, you know, stayed healthier, could sustain the losses maybe better than others. Because Minnesota, they might not have had a ton of guys out, but, you know, a couple of guys on the offensive line, and then, you know, you don't have your kicker, your punt, like these things matter. It matters like who it is, of course. I don't know. It's a weird thing. Do you want like one position group kind of decimated, or just a handful of guys all over the place? I mean, neither is, is ideal. But, you know, with that, we did give our Big Ten kind of lock of the week last week. Is that something that's going to be a weekly thing, or since you guys both botched it in the first week, are we done?
I say we do it.
Sure. Like I said, I gave my kind of my two locks. I said after we all took Illinois, that Wisconsin was a clear play. And, you know, sure enough, they turned out, and my Ohio State pick came true. Aaron, I thank you for kind of steering me away. If you recall, I was on the borderline of Rutgers or Ohio State, but I guess when in doubt, go with the better team giving points than the worst team getting them. But
Saturday morning I was on the phone with my buddy before any games had even started. It was obviously after the Wisconsin game, so we saw that debacle happen with our pick. But you know, I questioned myself, and I thought, I don't know why I didn't go with Rutgers on the road at Michigan State. They were getting what, 11 or 12 points or something like that. And the more I thought about it, I was on the phone and we were talking about, you know, bets and things, and I'm like, you know, State, we don't, like, they're bad. We don't know how good they're going to be. Rutgers, just like Shiano, tends to win games. And I don't know. I should have went with Rutgers. I didn't do it.
But. Yeah. I mean, it's just sure. But yeah, they hadn't been keeping it close against Big Ten teams for years. It was hard to see. But I'll kick off this week first if you want. I'll say, I'll give me Northwestern in the points against Iowa. I think Northwestern's a better team this year, getting 2.5. I know in the thing we did, I don't know if it's moved at all. Yeah, I'll take the Wildcats as my lock. I think it was a tough week where I didn't necessarily love everything or much at all, you know, this week, but that's one I did like. Northwestern, lock it up.
I'll make McMahon go last this week, and I'll take Ohio State laying 11.5 at Penn State. I mean, that Justin Fields, if there's one quarterback that was equally as dominant as Mertz last week, it was Justin Fields. Penn State is beat up. I mean, I don't think their offense looked very good against Indiana last week, and they're out with their two top running backs are out for the rest of the season. I just think that the Buckeyes have too much firepower and are going to win by more than two touchdowns. So lock that one in for me.
Yeah, I'm going the same. I think Zook, we're going to.
Oh, all right, take the Nittany Lions, folks.
I did. I'm on the other side of that one.
Yeah, so I'm going Ohio State. It was a minus 11.5. Yeah. I'm taking Ohio State. Penn State just didn't look very good against Indiana. I was surprised, and then they lose another running back. I think they're one-dimensional as it is. They just became more one-dimensional. I know Ohio State gave up some points early on in Nebraska, but they found their footing, I think. And I mean, they're going to have to not only beat Penn State, but I think show, you know, put a butt whooping on them. And I do think they're going to. So I'm locking up Ohio State.
I think there was one that we all six of us again had the same this week. True. Is it Indiana? Did we all take Indiana over Rutgers or no?
I think so.
Yes. Yes, we did. I'm looking at it now. So there you go. Rutgers. Rutgers is the lock of the week in those points. And I was torn on that one, but consensus play. Absolutely. And I'd be remiss if I didn't have our final note be Aaron. my dad wants me to tell you, as he does multiple times throughout the season, to vote for Wake Forest into your top 25 if they get a win this week. I don't know. I think they play Syracuse. I can't remember, but I don't know. Do you remember if you've been putting them in yet? Or maybe
I haven't
not
put
yet?
Them in, and I don't know if a win over Syracuse would do it.
All right.
We'll see.
You probably
I
had.
I will say that Syracuse held its own against Clemson the first half last week. They covered the spread, which was monumental. I think it was like 44 or 45 points or whatever it was. So they surprised me last week, but their offense is just bad. Like, I've watched a couple of their games this year. They struggled to move the football. So I don't think a win over the Orange Men would move the needle much. But we'll see. We'll see.
Wasn't Syracuse the last team to beat Clemson in the regular season a few years ago?
I think so.
I was thinking about it the other day. I couldn't remember if they actually won that game or not. I know that they were right there, but you could be right that they pulled it off. All right, where'd you have Michigan this week? I'm trying to remember. Did you have them at 13 or something
14,
like that?
14. Yeah, I moved them up from 16 to 14. They ended up 13 in AP polls. So yep. Right about where I have. I had them actually ranked high. I've had them ranked higher the last couple of weeks than the general AP poll had. I moved them two spots. They probably deserved more because I thought the win was impressive. But again, there were so few teams ahead of them that lost. Penn State was the only team ahead of them, ranked team ahead of them that lost. So it's like, you got to weigh their one win against some of these other schools, 3, 4, 5 wins. So the resumes are kind of tough. It was a difficult week to rank teams, but the more the Big Ten plays here, I think the more we'll be able to shake some things out.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to this episode.
We're not giving our Michigan State picks. Are we saving that for the Friday post, or are we giving them out?
Yeah, you tell me. I don't like to steal your thunder.
No, let's give them. I mean, we did them last week, right?
We did them last week. That's true.
Everyone but Andrew. Then later on, after I gave mine on the podcast, Andrew sends me his the same exact score. So, but hey, we were all right there in that 31-27-30 range.
All right, we don't need to rehash the epic mistake. All right. Yeah, I don't. You tell me. Who do you want? Whose pick you want to hear?
I'm going with Michigan 42, Michigan State 21. So the Spartans cover, but still lose by 3 touchdowns.
I have Michigan 42, State, I think, was 14, I think I sent in. I do think they cover. I don't think Michigan State scores a ton. I do think they'll probably clean up the turnovers to some degree. I don't think that was many. But Michigan's offense surprised me. And I think they got a good shot of duplicating what they were able to do last Saturday against the Gophers. So give me Michigan covering and winning big.
I missed both of your exact score predictions as I zoned out to really focus in on my pick and write it down. So if I have the exact same thing, I apologize. But it's Michigan 38, Michigan State 13. So kind of right there on the number, but not a competitive game, 38-13. All right. We'll watch and find out. We'll have a preview, more preview content in written form and in video form. I'll be doing a video preview that you can jump in on Facebook and comment with Michigan State beat writer Kyle Austin tomorrow, so Friday. So check that out. And thanks for listening.